This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
Titan's troubles at Oak Ridge.
And an interview with Xyratex's Mike Stoltz.
Hello for HPC Wire Soundbite for March 1st, 2013, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Richard Brandt, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research, who's coming to us live from the Oil and Gas HPC Workshop at Rice University. Hello, Addison.
Hey, Richard. Sorry about the background noise. It's a fun conference here in Houston.
That's good. So what's happening there? Any fun workshops or good talks?
Yeah, this is a good conference. Because of my travel this week, we're actually recording this on a Thursday evening rather than our normal Friday slot. So our listeners will apologize to our listeners. But this is a great conference, and they had over 400 pre-registered for it. The sessions were packed. This Rice University Oil and Gas HPC Workshop's now in its sixth year. And I think what's made it such a big growing success is it's organized by users for users in the HPC space. All the major oil and gas companies have representatives who not only attend but also organize the event, which then, of course, gets the vendor community to show up in droves and sponsor it. I think they had 21 vendor sponsors with Intel topping the list, and really outstanding content all day today.
So what kinds of things are you hearing there, Addison?
You know, I had a couple of favorites today. My first was the first plenary session today by Dirk Schmidt from Shell, who gave a keynote on the compute challenges to meet future energy demand. And the interesting thing was putting future energy demands in the context of also the future demands for water and the future demands for food, which go into an interesting triangle when you look at a population that's already 7 billion worldwide and moving up to 8, 9, 10 pretty quickly. And in the time frame that we're predicted to hit 9 billion in worldwide population, they're saying we need a 30% increase in food, in energy, a 40% increase in food, and a 50% increase in water, which starts pointing out, you know, the trade-offs between those and the potential fallacy in doing things like burning your food to get energy.
Yeah, I've always said that one was a bit strange myself. I guess you can use other plant materials to produce ethanol. What's the connection with water? I certainly see that the connection between the energy and oil and gas supplies and food. Where does water enter into that?
You certainly need water in order to grow the food. You also need water in order to get oil out of the ground. You use quite a bit of water in a lot of the pumping and extraction of oil. So all three of these things were linked. Then I also really enjoyed the final panel of the day, which had representatives from Shell, Jeff Jackson from Shell, and Jay Williamson from Chevron, along with two of the vendors, Scott Denham from IBM and Tom Tyler from HP, looking at future planning for oil and gas and HPC, with the whole thing moderated by Keith Gray of BP. It was just a really enlightening panel. So a fun conference, and one that's growing in popularity every year.
That's great. So you heading back out tonight? Or?
Well, I got some other meetings in Texas, but that's all right. Tell me, while I've been traveling, Richard, what's going on in the news?
Well, I think one of the big items was the Titan machine was not accepted by Oak Ridge National Labs, despite the fact that that won the top 500 this year.
You know, I glanced at my computer. I saw that headline. So Titan didn't pass its first acceptance test at Oak Ridge, huh?
That's right. That's right. Oak Ridge has said there are technical issues for this $100 million computer, and apparently it has to do with the interconnect fabric between the CPU and the GPU, allowing them to communicate. Apparently, when the applications start using the GPUs, there are sporadic faults, sporadic hiccups in the processing. So they're sending sections of the computer back to Cray for repair.
The crash of the Titan.
I guess so. It sounds like it's not going to be too serious a problem. They have to replace the fabrics, and they think the delay will be no more than a month or two before the whole thing is able to pass its tests.
I'm not particularly concerned about that. I mean, big supercomputers, it's fairly common for them to go through an extended acceptance test period. This is not the first, nor is it the last time that's going to happen. When you have that many components at that kind of scale, to have parts that have to go back for reconditioning, I'm not particularly alarmed. Joking aside, it gets attention because it's the number one system on the top 500 list, I guess, but I don't think it's that out of the ordinary.
That's a good point. I mean, this is an extraordinarily complex machine, and it did pass 92 to 93% of its tests. It needed 95 to really pass and get accepted, but it's not far off. So
I got an A-, and we need an A. So let's go back and do it again, right?
That looks like it. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Gary Johnson wrote a piece on top 500 in general and what it takes to be on the list.
Yeah, Gary Johnson is founder of the Computational Science Solutions, and he's wondering basically why some of the info that's supposed to be used to judge the top 500 is missing. Basically, a lot of NMAX and NHALF data. And he's written essentially an opinion piece saying the industry should really get its act together and make sure all of that stuff is reported.
You know, this is something I'm of two minds about. On the one hand, I kind of agree with the notion that if it's a component of the score that was required in order to get the top 500 listing, then that's probably something that ought to be disclosed if you're going to go ahead and put it on the list. You know, it would be like saying what place your relay race team came in without posting the splits of all of the different runners who were in it. If it was a required score that you needed for the ranking, then it should probably be on there. But on the other hand, I'm not that sussed about, you know, the disclosure with regards to it being used for public funds or, you know, if these are really the top systems, what are their scores? There's no requirement to be on the top 500 list at all, and most notably, Blue Waters isn't. Bill Kramer was here giving an in-depth presentation today on the Blue Waters system, gave a lot of details about it, but nothing about top 500 because he says it's not the goal of that system. And there have always been commercial systems in all kinds of industries, whether oil and gas or finance or what have you, where the end user chooses not to submit. And I don't think you're making the case right now that all of those have to be made public.
Yeah, you know, this is an opinion piece by Gary, and he seems to feel that it's just worthwhile to the industry to have enough information that it helps them with their own efforts and figure out what directions to go. So, I know.
It helps to the extent that you have applications that are similar in workload to LINPACK. But Bill Kramer, since I mentioned him with regards to NCSA, said an interesting quote today. It was right on his slide that the time to solution is really the only metric. And it makes things like the LINPACK less relevant in terms of is it the system that you want to buy. It's still a great metric in terms of where are we in scientific development? What are the limits of computing? How high can we scale? There's a lot of investment that gets driven by top 500. I think it's a great benchmark and a great list. I just don't know how required it ought to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay.
You know, before we wrap the podcast, Richard, we had one other follow-up item from last week. We were talking about Xyratex and their acquisition of Lustre from Oracle. This has been a major topic of conversation here at the conference and other people I've talked to this week. And I caught up with Mike Stoltz, who's the Vice President of Marketing Alliances for Xyratex, and got a little interview with him about the acquisition of Lustre. Here's what he had to say. I'm speaking with Mike Stoltz, who's the Vice President of Marketing Alliances and Support Services at Xyratex. Mike, thanks for joining me.
Hey, no problem. Glad to be a part
Mike,
of it.
Yeah, well, Xyratex was a big part of our news the last cycle around, as Xyratex announced that it had purchased the remaining Lustre assets from Oracle, returning them to the hands of the HPC community. Can you recap that for us and tell us exactly what it was that Xyratex bought?
Sure. We're obviously very excited about this, and glad that we were able to partner with Oracle and securing these assets and bringing them closer to the community. So we announced on February 19th that we had acquired the Lustre trademark, the logo that's associated with that, the website, lustre.org, and all the associated intellectual property. And then additionally, we took responsibility for some support agreements that Oracle had in place with some Lustre customers, and those Lustre customers are now being supported by Xyratex personnel and fulfilling those agreements. So, you know, what we're excited to bring Lustre back into more of a community focus, working very closely with OpenSFS, EOFS, and all of the other trade associations to ensure that the community is able to benefit from Lustre, as it continue to benefit from Lustre, and that we maintain the open agreements and the strategy around keeping it as an open source software program.
Well, what was the impetus for Xyratex in approaching Lustre with this?
Well, you know, Addison, our products, the Cluster Store range of solutions, are all designed to work with Lustre. So that's the only file system that we support with our Cluster Store system. So for us, it's strategically important to ensure that Lustre continues to grow, that the community is very strong, and that the community continues to put Lustre to use in applications and brings new applications forward. So for us, you know, it's about ensuring that the Lustre community and Lustre itself continue to grow, because that's the area in which our products work. So, and I think also, you know, as you may remember, you know, we bought Cluster Store a number of years ago, and we've got a lot of expertise in the Lustre area, and so it's a perfect area for us to continue to focus. We've been a very active partner in OpenSFS and other organizations, added a lot of content back to the community, and want to ensure that community continues to grow and to benefit from Lustre.
Well, sure. With the Cluster Store acquisition, some of your significant partnerships in HPC, such as with the Crace and XE Online, which is installed at Blue Waters, now this acquisition from Oracle, there's been a lot of momentum on the Xyratex side. What I like is that you're discussing it in the context of the Lustre community. What reaction are you getting from some of the community members?
We've been very pleased with the reaction that we've received. You know, as you may have noticed in the announcement, we had quite a few high-profile folks from the community, from OpenSFS and EOFS, from the vendor side with support from Cray and others, as well as from end users that are very active in Lustre, so, you know, including NCSA, which you just referred to, and TAC, both providing some support for that. So as we announced this, obviously, you know, it was kept quiet until the transaction was complete. But once we announced it, the reaction has been extremely positive. Some great support. I think if you look at, the quotes that you provided and some of the news that's come out, I think generally the industry is very pleased to see this come back toward closer to the HPC community, someone who's very committed to this community and an organization that wants to see that community grow and continue to get strong.
Well, going back to when Oracle acquired Sun to begin with, the big question on a lot of people's minds was what was to become of the future of Lustre, and I think that's the question that remains on people's mind as we move now Lustre more fully into the HPC community as a whole. What do you foresee as the future of Lustre adoption?
Well, you know, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when Xyratex started to become very active in this, you know, Luster was kind of going through a very challenging time. You know, this is right around the period that Oracle had kind of changed their strategies. It was a very difficult time for the Luster community as a whole, trying to get organized, and lots of people played a key role in that. You know, the user base, organizations like WAM Cloud and OpenSFS and all of these types of organizations all kind of rallied to bring that about. You know, Xyratex joined OpenSFS as soon as we entered this market a couple of years ago, and you know, we find that to be the right organization to kind of help foster that mentorship, if you will, for Luster, and to foster community support. So by, you know, having a strong OpenSFS and EOFS organizational base, by having a strong user base who's committed to this, I think Luster is in a very good position, probably the best it's been in for a number of years in terms of being able to grow. You know, it's in 60% of the top 100 sites. It's very active use. We're seeing it grow into new application areas, and so we're excited about it. We think that the community will continue to help foster the adoption in those areas, and we think that Luster, as such a high-performance system as Cray demonstrated with Snexy and at NCSA, that Luster's got a very meaningful role in high-performance computing.
We've been speaking with Mike Stoltz, Vice President of Marketing Alliances and Support Services at Xyratex. Mike, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks, Addison.
So I appreciated Mike joining me on the podcast there for that little interview. What do you think, Richard?
I think it sounds great. A lot of people are certainly happy that Luster is firmly in the hands of organizations dedicated to the open source nature of this project.
Well, there are two important components on that we managed to touch on. One is, I think people are looking for clarity around what specifically was purchased, right? Because Luster is fundamentally an open source community effort, which leads to the second point that Mike hit again and again in his talk, which is that they're looking to continue to work within and through the Luster open source community. There didn't seem to be an intention to fork Luster or take it off on their own. They're bringing it out for the HPC community, continue to work with the community. I think that was a really important component of his responses there.
Yeah, that's the big point, really. We make sure that there still has support in the open source community. It's not owned by any one organization. It's just good news to see it go that direction.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Richard, and I'm going to head off to my next Texas destination.
All right. Have a great time, Addison.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.